onto something that's basically a good, pleasant, enjoyable, celebratory situation. The Favourite. Starring Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone, this week received a staggering 10 Oscar nominations, making it the most nominated Irish film in history. And no matter what happens from here on in, everybody can take a bow on that one. And one of those nominations went to the Dubliner, Robbie Ryan, who was the cinematographer on the film. And Robbie joins me now from London. Robbie, first of all, congratulations. Is it a special thing to be an Oscar nominee?
Thank you very much, Marion, for having me on your show. I don't know. Is it a special thing? Yeah, it's amazing. It's a bit surreal. I kind of usually at this time of the year, I'm looking at all the nominations for the Oscars and going, what the hell's that doing there? Or, you know,
yeah,
I wouldn't have gone for that one. So now that I'm in that position, it's kind of, it's a weird feeling, but it's nice.
I'm sure it is nice. You've been Oscar or nominated for an Oscar on another movie in the past, a short movie. But tell me the role, as you see it, of a cinematographer.
Well, I wasn't nominated for that film. That was a short film called Wasp.
That's right.
Where I was involved with it, yes. And it was, that was great. That helped me to get ahead of the cinematographer, I think, a bit more. So the Oscars are good for that. But what is a cinematographer?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. A cinematographer, in simple terms, I think, is sort of the eyes of the director, if you know what I mean. They kind of trust in the person to, you know, visualize their idea and, you know, put that into effect as such. So I do the best to kind of get the vision of the director visually.
And how much of that is verbalized beforehand?
Depends on who you work with, I guess. Like I've worked with quite a few directors and they're all very different, and each person has their own approach. So with somebody like Yorgos on The Favourite,
yeah,
it was quite hard to sometimes figure out what way he was thinking, because he's quite a visionary director, and in a way, you know, the look of this film is something very different to what I've done before. So I was learning every day from him, really. And
how would you describe the look of this film?
Absurd. it's a crazy film. I don't know. He's a very distinct visual director, you know. So he's got, if you've seen his other films, you'll know that they're kind of, there's a continuity there. And I would say everybody on the film didn't really know what way it was going to look as we were filming it, you know, which was great.
What
it was very fresh.
And why was that? I was looking and thinking back. Olivia Colman's role, she plays the Queen.
Yeah.
And did she discuss with you, or did she discuss with him, or do you have to discern how she's going to go at certain phases of the movie, so to speak, how she's going to interpret it? This is, I mean, just briefly for the listeners who haven't seen it, she was the Queen. I came home and I Googled her afterwards. She was 17th century, 16th something, and was kind of a generation before William of Orange and James. And she ended up as Queen for a fairly short time. I have to say there wasn't an attractive character in the whole movie. If there was anyone you felt you could identify with, it might have been her.
She's quite a sad character, yeah. And she had a tough life, really. So I don't know, like,
tell people how she had a tough life.
How do you go? Well, she was, she never had an heir, so she never had a child. She tried 17 times to have children. She had three children that were born with illnesses, so they never really got further than 5 or 10 years old.
Yeah.
So she never had an heir. She was desperate to do that. So I think through all that trauma of having so much, you know,
sorrow
and childbirth, that she became very kind of, isolated and just she kind of within herself and wasn't a happy woman. But at the same time, she did do quite a few things. I looked her up as well when I was making the film. Yeah. Not that it matters about the film, but she kind of did do quite a few things. She unified Britain. She did something that's not going on at the minute. She was the one who brought Scotland and England together. So she did a lot of good things as well, but the film has no bearing on that really, and it's all about a kind of a power play between these three characters who, I, as you say, aren't the nicest characters in the world, and they try. They're very human, I think, though. They kind of they are
hate one another.
They do things to each other that, you know, we all do to each other at certain times, and, you know, it's very much a relatable story, human story, you know?
Yeah, and but jealousy and all of that kind of
thing. Yeah, and how to get ahead. And it's usually, and what's nice and refreshing in this film is it's done around three female characters instead of all the men, and all the men are sort of like, sort of very foppish, foolish characters in the film, and I think that's really nice as well.
Yeah. The other thing that took me a bit, and I presume this is down to your art, so to speak, is somebody slapping somebody across the face manages to feel like one of the most appalling acts of violence.
He likes to slap, Yorgos. If you look at his films, he's always got a slap in there. And this one has, I don't know, it's about 10 slaps. And yeah, you're right. They're very effective. And
how do you get them? I mean, I'm not suggesting that somebody slapping somebody across the face is ever an acceptable thing to do, but how does it go? Is that the way it's shot that makes it
no? They're slapping
so
them.
Shocking.
They gave them a royal slap. But they get a good slap. There was definitely slaps going on, and there's a little bit of camera sort of angles that help accentuate that, and the editing of the film is phenomenal, so all of that is very well edited to make it look even more sort of harsh, I guess, and the sound effects obviously as well, but there was real slaps happening.
Shocking. Yeah, I mean, that's not what the movie's particularly about. It's interesting that you talk about the men hanging around, and there were the various scenes from the House of Commons.
Yeah,
and you know, you were talking about today, I mean, her writ ran ish, you know, she could say what was going to happen, but everybody was trying to manipulate her, and everybody was trying to pursue their own advantage.
Absolutely, yeah.
So no, it's she couldn't trust a sinner. She couldn't trust a soul.
This is a sad thing, yeah. And it seems to be that her favorite, her friend Sarah Marlborough, was the one she trusted the most. But then she was fooled by this girl Abigail Masham, and then, you know, it was all playing on her friendships, really. So it was very manipulative. If the truth is there about how that worked, and I think she was just a vulnerable character who, you know, wanted to be loved.
yeah. You know, it's a fairly human thing. The other thing, when you were talking about the characters and the men. And they're ridiculous wigs, but you know, they were in period and all that. And some of the scenes of them disporting themselves, shall we say, with the poor, misfortunate fella with no clothes on, having, was it oranges that were being pelted
at? Blood oranges, yes, yeah.
That was for sport.
They had some crazy sports back then. They really did. Like, there's lots of that shown in the film, like duck racing and, as you say, the throwing the oranges. And it was all a very decadent time, and they had a lot of fun doing all that, and they kind of lived it up, really, I think.
And then for somebody like you, because this was not, you haven't done royals before, so to speak.
I don't think so.
And you like, how do you approach this? I understand the director did not want any lighting.
First of all, the royals thing. Yeah, I thought I'd never make a film about royal families. I've seen so many of them now, and they're kind of, it's a genre of its own now, because it sort of obviously sells to have a film about some royal member of the, you know, the family. So yeah. I think I was going, oh, God, I can't do another royal. I can't be getting involved with this kind of silliness. But I think what's great about this film is it's a very fresh take on it, and it shows it in a totally different light, which is, always a difficult thing and something that's been done so much. And as far as the way we approached lighting, it was also kind of fresh, because Yes, Yorgos doesn't like used lights. He loves natural light. And I've done quite a few films that are natural lighting sort of things. And, you know, the location we were filming in, the actors we were filming, the costumes we were filming, was all, they all looked amazing in front of the camera without any light. So we didn't need to use them. And then when we were using candles at nighttime, that it looked beautiful as well. And he's quite a brave sort of director, right. Cinematographically, yes. By pushing the kind of the boundaries of what you would normally do. Usually you'd bring a light in to make sure everything was correct in supposed terms. And what we were doing was sort of maybe doing something that wasn't necessarily correct, I guess. I don't know. But it looks much more beautiful without
it
using
looks
lights.
Very, very beautiful. And I understand that place has been used for a lot of movies, but you
a
don't
lot.
Recognize it. And how many candles did you use?
I don't know. I think, well, number one, everybody gets a budget, each department, and my budget would have been a lighting budget. So we were going, oh, well, great, we don't have any, it's not an expensive budget for us. But the production design has to pay for all the candles. So they were my lighting, and the poor production designer had to get so many candles for me, because it was in her sort of department as such, so that cost her department a hell of a lot more money and our department none. So it's supposedly, I don't know, somebody said somewhere in the region of 80,000. I don't know if that's true.
80,000 candles, it's a lot of candles.
And what I realised, I never thought when we were making it that candles melt quite quickly, so there was a lot of wax flowing around.
The other thing I gather, that I read a quote from you, that a lot of the shooting was a rabbit's eye view of something, which means you're looking up at somebody, which is, I gather, the most unflattering way to do it.
I don't know, is it, Marion?
You're the professional.
I don't know what's unflattering and what's flattering. I don't, an angle's an angle, but I would have thought it's a power angle, you know, it's like looking up at somebody, but apparently it's not I don't know. That's an answer for somebody else to say, but and then somebody else, I've been asked that question a lot, is why is there low angles, and I have no answer to it, except somebody at one of these sort of questions and answers came up and says, I thought it was a rabbit's point of view. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. It is. That's exactly what it is. So I've been using that ever since. It's not something it's not something we sat down about and talked about in prep, shall we say.
Right. And I gather Emma Stone wasn't overly pleased about being shot up her nose, so to speak.
On the first day of shooting, which, again, as I said, it was all, we didn't really quite know what way the shoot was going to go until Yorgos started kind of, he'd get his camera out and he'd take a picture and he goes, shall we shoot this like this? And I go, oh, right, okay, let's try that. And she's obviously quite a seasoned actor, and she was able to, you know, she knows where the camera goes. And so when she saw the camera really on the floor looking up at her, she said, oh, it's going to be that kind of movie, is it?
Anyway,
She's great.
Well, that's part of the professionalism, that you're not looking to look good, you're looking to look right,
exactly.
in character. Now,
exactly.
I gathered that there was a great camaraderie on the making of this film.
Yeah, no, I think Yorgos again brought together a lot of people that, you know, were going to enjoy the job.
Yeah,
it was an enjoyable job. It was a comedy, so you hope that you're going to have fun on a comedy. Not necessarily that is always the case, but I think he was very keen to get that, you know, camaraderie, as you say, together. And the actors loved working on it, and they were all having such a laugh. Like, they were talking so much in between takes that, you know, you'd have to tell them to shut up so that they could just start acting again. Like, that was the only thing that was driving him mad, is that the girls were all just going off, chatting about everything, and then you'd go, okay, now this is the bit where you've lost your child or something like that, and, you know, she's crying her eyes out all of a sudden. So it's a really interesting kind of process, watching actors just having a good time.
Right, okay. Now, a rather sad event occurred for you in the middle of all that shooting and nice things going on, in that you lost your father while it was going on.
I did, yeah. It was quite a shock. My dad was a private air pilot, and he was a plane enthusiast. He built his own plane, and he was you know, very, very accomplished pilot and very safe pilot, actually. But he took his plane up for the first flight of the year, and he'd been flying it for 20 years. He built it for 14, and unfortunately ran into engine trouble, and he crashed it down in Waterford, in Dummer East. And I you know what you do when you get that news. It was such a shock, and it was on like the second week of the shoot, and he was meant to come over and visit me in London, and my brother rang me up and he said, "Are you sitting down?" So it's very sad, yeah.
Because you were very close to him. You had lived with him, and he had gone to Hollywood with you, I understand.
Hollywood, to Cannes. He's more of a Europhile, you know?
Yeah, yeah, more of Hollywood.
Much more art house. He wouldn't go for those action movies. But yeah, no, I used to bring him to all those things, and they all, in Cannes especially, the people would think he was a producer. Because he's like, you know, he's always quite jolly, talking to everybody, shaking everybody's hands. And they go, "Oh, wow, he seems like quite an exec producer, that guy." So, you know, they were all shocked and sad to hear he's gone as well. So he was quite an amazing man at, you know, making people smile. Yeah. He was a really sweetheart.
And he had kind of, as it were, used his flying and his interests after your mother had died from cancer.
That's correct, yeah, yeah. My mum had died of cancer, like, when she was 60, so that was, it's like nearly 27 years ago, I think. Basically, the last thing she said to him was, "Will you finish that plane?" Because he'd been building it forever, in the back garden. So she said, because she knew she was going, she said, "Just finish that plane, will you?" And he just went full on for doing that. And, it's such a beautiful circle of a story, really, because, you know, that's how he ended it all. So, you know, he was quite an amazing guy, really.
Right. And you took the view, I don't wish to put words into your mouth, that he died doing what he would really love to do, rather than lingering on with some illness, that kind of, some cruel illness.
Well, the irony of it all is, Marion, that Dad was going to a medical every year, because you have to be very, very, you know, the legal side of everything, you have to be fit to fly a plane. So he was actually fitter than he ever was, because he was going to get his medical every year.
Oh, right.
And that's the weird thing about the way he wasn't a sick man at all. And I reckon, you know, we've got, you know, hopefully he would have lived another 20 years, 10 years, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it was not like, it's just if anybody loses a family member, it's such a shock. You know, it's you just can't figure it out. But obviously, it was something he adored doing, and it's a way to go.
Yeah. And tell me, for you then to go back to work, was that difficult, or was it useful?
It was not. Yeah, no, it was great, actually. Like, not just, it's a great situation, obviously, but the support system on a film set is really like a family, and I can't thank enough the producers and all the people who worked on it, because they just totally rallied around me and supported me and made me kind of, you know, have a distraction, or just it became a much more of a an easier process to get the grieving process done. And, you know, work is a great thing for the mind when you kind of don't want to linger on dark thoughts, you know. So they were brilliant, and luckily it's a comedy, and I was able to forget about it for a while, you know.
Right. How did you start out, either in cinematography or towards cinematography?
Me and my cousins were making short films when we were like 15, and we got a video camera. We were running around making these crazy little films, and I got the bug doing it then, and I went to film school, and, you know, I'm a bit of a lifer for it, really. I kind of knew that's what I was. I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I loved the whole kind of fun of making things. And when you go to film school, it was just like meeting like-minded people, and you kind of begin to kind of crystallize where your best attributes are, you know. And I became a bit of a camera guy there. And that was 1991 or two, I left film school. So I've been at it for a while.
And did you go straight to London, or did you work here first?
No, what happened was, it was tricky back then, coming out of film school, to become, you know, straight into being a cinematographer. There was a union system that would sort of, there was not keen to have you go become a cinematographer straight away. You kind of have to go through the trades as such to become a, you know, become a loader, you know, film loader. Then you would become a focus puller, and there was that tradition. And I wasn't really tuned into doing that, so I kind of was a little bit frustrated because they wouldn't let me do that. And I remember being in the union head office one time, being told, if you're on this film as an operator, we're going to close the film down. So I was really, didn't know what to do. And then luckily two friends from college went to London, and they were working in commercials, and they said, oh, come over here, we'll get you a job. And I came over, and it was totally different in London. And, you know, I was luckily able to go straight into working as a cinematographer on commercials for a few years. And yeah, it was a no-brainer. I was going, I'm staying here.
Yeah. And I think rather charmingly, you live on a boat.
I do. I've been living on it for a couple of years now. Yeah, it's getting cold at the minute, but I got a stove, so it warms me up.
I presume, was that just a romantic whim, or was it straight up money?
A bit of both. Me and one of my good friends over here owned another boat, a little river boat that we were going, and we'd hang out in it all summer. And it's such fun to just like live on a boat on a river. It's really, really peaceful and relaxing and fun. And I was going, geez, I'm living in a flat in London that's driving me mad. So I wonder if I buy a boat in London, will that work? And I kind of got really lucky. It wasn't too expensive, and it is a romantic way of living. It's very, you know, it's not for everybody, but it's a great community living in the marina, and you know, there's lots of families and characters, and it's just a nice way of living in London, which is a very, you know, as you know, it's a big city, so it's a little bit, you know, of a different step from having a flat.
Now the kind of film you like to make are kind of films about issues rather than say what this one is about. You just finished off working with Ken Loach on a film about zero-hour contracts called Sorry We Missed You. That's your space, is it?
No, I'll work on... It's more about the people you work with, not the projects you work on. And his films are usually very issue-based, so... When we do films with him, it's very much like that. But I kind of, you know, it's more about the directors you work with than the ideas. And it's great to work on something like the film we just done with Ken, because you really get a sense of how kind of crazy some of the world is at the minute. And he's such a, you know, a man with so many, you know, good things to say about, you know, he really has a message he wants to get across all the time, and there's very few people making films with that angle, you know, which is crazy, really. It's a shame it's there's not more people like Ken, because you know, it's a great medium for getting across a message. And I think
he does
tell it so well.
Us a little bit about that movie.
Yeah, it's a film about a family who are living in where are they living in Newcastle. And the guy gets a job working, driving a van. And the whole thing is that if you buy your own van, then you kind of, you're your own boss, but you're still not really, because you're working for a company, and they basically just treat you pretty bad. You don't have any, you know, safety net if you have accidents, or, you know, you get ill, or if you miss a day, you're just losing money constantly. And I don't know how people survive. It's a really, really difficult time.
Yeah, a lot of people surviving on it now.
It's not a good thing.
And they do sometimes, many of them don't know how many hours they're going to get and how many hours.
Yeah, and basically this film's about him just basically working himself into the ground, and the whole family sort of suffering because of it. And at the end of it, he still can't get out of it. You know, it's a vicious circle.
Right. I'll bring you back to Hollywood now. are you going to the Oscars?
Ah, yeah, sure. You've got to try everything once, Marion, you know.
Because it strikes me that like your father, you might prefer the European and Cannes.
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. Cannes is a fantastic festival, because it's a different thing, because the Hollywood thing, right, is you're going over to celebrate a film that's been made, whereas in Cannes, you're going over to look at a film and show the film for the first time. So it's much fresher. Whereas if you're going to Hollywood to sort of, everybody's celebrating about something else, it's a different thing, because it's a promotional thing more than a, you know, look at this is the first time we're showing a film. And The Favourite was shown in Venice for its first premiere, and that was fantastic because it was, you know, in front of an audience who did not know what to expect. And the energy in the room when you see a film for the first time is really a special thing. So any day of the week, I'd go to Venice or Cannes and not Hollywood.
There you go. Well, anyway, you're off to Hollywood. I understand.
I am still going though. Yeah. Yeah, I like a party as well, Marion.
Well, that's always good as well. I should have reminded people at the very beginning that you worked on Philomena as well. I forgot
that's
to
right,
say
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I was going to say, did that get nominated for an Oscar? It did, didn't it?
It did, I think, to the best of my knowledge. Yeah,
it did. Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, that was a great film. That was really enjoyable to work on.
Was it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, Steve Coogan, that was very much Steve Coogan's sort of project, and he was very enjoyable to work with. He's a funny guy. So I really liked that. And the whole team on that one were brilliant. And Philomena herself was an amazing woman, really. And
yes.
She, God bless her, she had to promote the film when it came out. So she was at every promotional do as well. So I don't know, she probably enjoyed it for the first few. And then by the end of it, she must have been exhausted.
Yeah.
It's very, the promotional side of things is so, I've seen it on this film, The Favourite. It's such a big deal for everybody involved. They have to put in a lot of work, you know.
Yeah, but you would say that this is a networking business, and that just the nomination, you know, just the nomination will make a lot of names here, won't it? And it'll get a lot of work for people.
I guess so. I don't think it's a bad thing to get a nomination for an Oscar.
I don't think so. No,
I think the best thing for all of these, the Oscars and the BAFTAs and all that stuff, I think the people who usually do well out of them are the short films, because they get a chance to make a feature film. So there's a bonus there. I think where we're at with the actors and all that, they're all at a stage where they're kind of probably getting work anyway. So it's just more better work, I suppose. But I think the biggest leap was like for somebody like Andrea, which she made Wasp, that short film.
Yes.
That was such a benefit for her to try and get a feature made. And, you know, I think they're the people who do kind of benefit most.
Right. I remember Brenda Fricker saying that, you know, the phone started hopping after her turn, which is great. But anyway, you will be feted and all of that, and have a great party. And I wish you all every success. Well, obviously, you'd love to get the Oscar yourself. Apart from yourself, within the film, who would you go for?
I would love to see Yorgos win something, because if you look at The Favourite, his touch is all over it. You know, he's quite, like, I hate the word auteur, but he's in that world because it's very much his film. So I think if he won something, it would be brilliant. Other than that, I hope the editor wins it, because it's brilliantly edited. And the rest, you know, would only be a bonus.
Right. Well, not your own, I hope. But anyway, nice call in from one of our listeners. Well, for many of our listeners, one I'm going to read out. What a lovely man Robbie sounds. I'm sure his parents would be very proud of him. Lots of success to him. And that comes from a gentleman called Frank. So on that note, I wish you well. I wish you every success with it. And because I presume, apart from Oscars and work, this will get more people to go and watch the movie.
You'd hope so. Yeah, absolutely. That's what the whole thing's about, I guess. Get bums on seats, as they say. I, what's great about this film is it seems that everybody really does enjoy it when they go see it. So it's nice to work on a film where people go, oh, I saw that film, it's really good, instead of like, oh, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, different quality. Anyway, nice to talk to you. Robbie Ryan, cinematographer on The Favourite, and they're all heading for Hollywood. And a very good day to you.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.